Well, happy new year, everybody. 2014, the year of Bitcoin. And happy fifth birthday, Bitcoin. You turned 5 years old just 3 days ago on January 3rd. That's the time the Genesis block was created back in 2009. I'm Paul Boyer. Welcome to the Mad Money Machine. Coming up on this episode of the Mad Money Machine, we'll pull something out of the Mad Money Machine Bitcoin tool crib. We'll take a spin at the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. And I'll have a one-way debate with Goldbug Robert Wenzel. And in addition to that, we'll look at Bitcoin in the news, we'll look at the Bitcoin markets, and I'll update you on the Let's Talk Bitcoin podcast contest and see how we're doing in that. This is January 6th. Let's call it episode 3 of the Mad Money Machine. Yes, Bitcoin is 5 years old. On January 3rd, 2009, that's when Saint Satoshi Nakamoto created the Genesis block, which is the first block in the chain of transactions, or blocks, that you must have in order for all blocks to be validated. Interestingly, that very first block, the Genesis block, includes the following text. The Times. 3 January 2009, Chancellor on brink of second bailout for banks. And there's a couple things interesting about that little quote that Satoshi put in there. One is it sort of timestamps the Genesis block, so you know it couldn't have really occurred before that date, because it's a quote of the London Times newspaper headline. And the second interesting thing about that quote is it talks about how the central banks manipulate the money. And speaking of birthdays and central banks, the Federal Reserve System of the United States celebrated its 100th birthday back on the 23rd of December, 2013. I guess I missed seeing its withered face in front of a glowing birthday cake on the Today Show celebrating its 100th birthday. Happy birthday, old man. May you live a few more years. So let me talk briefly as I can about the Let's Talk Bitcoin podcast contest, which I've asked you to help me win. Originally, I thought the way to win it was to get as many people as possible to send in 0.1 millibitcoins. In other words, every 0.1 millibitcoin from a different person counted as one vote. And so if I had, 40 people voting, then that would be 40 votes. Well, it turns out there's a clarification in the rules. And it's the total amount of money sent in on that Bitcoin address is going to be deemed the winner. So basically, it's like an auction to win the Bitcoin contest. And that's all right. But it's just a matter of that's not how I understood the rules to work. So if you want Mad Money Machine to win the Let's Talk Bitcoin podcast contest, please go out to my website, madmoneymachine.com. In the show notes for this show, you'll see an address. That's where you'll need to send Bitcoin. It's my address. It's not sending it to them. It's me. And what I'm going to do is if I get enough money from you to win the contest, then I will send it and enter it in the contest. If I see that I have not gotten enough money to win the contest, on the other hand, I'll keep it as a donation to this show, which is much needed. In fact, if you just want to donate to the show, go out to madmanmachine.com and you'll see a code there which you can send your bitcoins to keep this show going. Well, it is Monday, January 6th. Tomorrow, January 7th, I get to go to my first Bitcoin meetup down in D.C. There's supposed to be about 26 of us down there. I'm looking forward to that. Even though it's going to take me about an hour to get there and an hour to get back, I will spend that time listening to old episodes of Let's Talk Bitcoin, and that'll be worth it. So as a podcaster about Bitcoin, it's my responsibility to comb through the news and report to you what's going on. And, you know, as I got more and more into this, and I'm really trying to process all of the news that's out there, you know, I look at all the various websites and all, I've got bookmarks galore of all the references to Bitcoin and all the Bitcoin news sites and all the forums and places you talk about Bitcoin and links and things. It occurred to me, it's a lot like processing the Bitcoin blockchain. You know, in order to validate the most recent block, you have to have all the previous blocks validated as well. And that's what I've been going through the past couple of months, is going back and reading all the papers and all the comments and everything. But I've got to admit that by doing that, by parsing this Bitcoin news chain of news chain, there are 10 things about Bitcoin that I'm growing really tired of. These are the top 10 Bitcoin things I'm growing really tired of. Number 10. Seeing physical bitcoins pictured in an article about bitcoins. Bitcoin is not a physical thing. Number 9. Ma and Pa Schmo now accept Bitcoin. I don't really care that some yoga instructor somewhere in Podunk Centerville now accepts bitcoins. Get back to me when eBay starts taking them, okay? Number 8. I'm tired of hearing about the 21 million Bitcoin limit. How about 2.1 quadrillion Satoshis? Is that enough for you? Number 7. Talk of how Bitcoin is not anonymous. Well, neither are credit cards. Get over it. If you want to exchange value over the internet, you're going to have some degree of snooping. Number 6. Central Bank of Fiatville warns against Bitcoin. All right, let's just make a list of all central banks and write an article about how they warn against Bitcoin and get over with it, all right? Number 5 of the top 10 Bitcoin things I'm growing really tired of. Bitcoin hit a high of $1,200. Is it a bubble? Number 4. Gold bugs hating on Bitcoin. David Morgan, Gary North, and as we'll see, Robert Wenzel. Hey guys, if James Turk and Trace Mayer can convert, so can you. Number 3. Altcoins in the long tail. I don't care about Joe Schmo's altcoin, all right? Number 2 in the top 10 things I'm growing really tired of about Bitcoin, waiting for the Bitcoin QT client to load that blockchain. And the number 1 top 10 thing I'm growing really tired of when I read articles about Bitcoin is Paul Krugman, whose last name is pronounced Krugman, which ironically rhymes with Krugerrand, and whose initials, ironically, are the same as public key. Well, that's the top 10 Bitcoin things I'm growing really tired of. Speaking of altcoins, though, I wonder what will happen when Katy Perry creates an altcoin, the Perry coin, the Katy coin. Katy coin, let's call it. She has nearly 50 million followers on Twitter. She's the number one most followed Twitter account in the Twitterverse. And what will happen then when she creates an altcoin and tweets about it? Says, everyone, get my new altcoin. Get the Katy Perry coin and you can buy my next album with it. I guess in a sense we're actually seeing this happen with the Kanye coin. Kanye West, apparently, somebody created a coin in his name and I guess you can buy his album with it whenever it comes out. I wonder if I'll be able to go to Target and buy the next Katy Perry album with my Target gift card. It's a good thing. You know, over Christmas, I actually did some shopping at Target. And lucky me, I used Bitcoin to pay for things at Target. Yeah, I used gift.com, G-Y-F-T. This is not an advertisement. I actually bought, just to try it out, the gift cards for Target through gift.com. I guess you save 3% or something. Then I get on my smartphone, then I get a little barcode that I show to the cashier, and it comes right out of my gift card. And guess what? It wasn't stolen. My credit card information wasn't stolen because I didn't use a credit card or a debit card. Thank goodness at Target. Let's pull something out of the Mad Money Machine Bitcoin Tool Crib. It's the Bitcoin Tool of the Week. And this week, it's a tool for helping you as you're browsing the web. It's CryptoKit for Chrome. And as far as I know, only Chrome. It's an app that plugs into the Chrome browser, and it does several things for you. One is it helps you pay to an address that you might find on the web pages that you're browsing. Secondly, it gives you some Bitcoin news links that are easy to click on and read about Bitcoin news. Thirdly, it has a chart of the Bitcoin prices for the last 24 hours and the last 30 days. And fourthly, and I think really interestingly, it has an encrypted email system built into it using GPG. And out on my About page of madmoneymachine.com, you can find my address. If you'd like to try to send me some encrypted messages through CryptoKit. And of course, in addition to all that, you can receive Bitcoins to the Bitcoin address it generates for you. So that's our Bitcoin tool of the week, CryptoKit, KRYPTOKIT.com. Go get it, because like the best things in life, it's free. The best things in life are free. Yeah, so I don't like yoga instructors announcing that they're accepting Bitcoin necessarily. I mean, that's kind of fun and all, but I'm a little tired of it. But I am interested in the big players that are talking about accepting Bitcoin. Of course, in the past few weeks, we've heard of some rumors of some big players. Overstock.com. Patrick Byrne there announced that they will accept a Bitcoin in 2014. Zynga, along with CryptoKit, we just mentioned, will be able to pay for your, Farmville using Bitcoin. And then a couple of rumors hit this past week. Max Kaiser thinks that Netflix will eventually accept Bitcoin. And somebody said that Facebook out in the Netherlands might start accepting Bitcoin for advertising payments. I'm not sure all of these rumors turned out to be true, but it's interesting to consider. I think the big one's going to be eBay. I think being able to get rid of PayPal in the middle, which is something that I'm sure they would not at all want to do, but I think eBay is really the right place for Bitcoin. Without further ado, let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of Bitcoin gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, give you a little background on their Bitcoin philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Men Machine episode number 3 is Jason Calacanis. Oh yeah, Jason Calacanis is a Bitcoin guru. He was born in November 28th, 1970. He's an American internet entrepreneur and blogger. His first company was part of the dot-com era in New York, and his second venture, Weblogs Incorporated, a publishing company that he co-founded together with Brian Alvey, capitalized on the growth of blogs before being sold to AOL. As well as being an angel investor in various technology startups, Calacanis also keynotes industry conferences worldwide. And he hosts the show This Week in Startups. And I'm sure, much to Leo Laporte's dismay, he owns the website thisweekin.com. But anyway, in May 10th, 2011 to be exact, Jason talked about Bitcoin on his This Week in Startups show. Let's have a listen.
You know, like, and listen, this is a departure from a normal episode. We're not talking about, like, hey, here's how to build your startup. But the reason I want to do this is because this trend is so big that this could lead to 100 startups of note being formed. If Bitcoin becomes a real business, Bitcoin exchanges, selling, I'm thinking about taking...
And those could be
businesses. I'm thinking about taking Bitcoin for... And those could be good. Right. I'm thinking of taking Bitcoin... I mean, listen, Linux is not a business, either, except it's everybody's business. So smarten up, people. Right. I mean, this is a fundamental technological shift that could occur on the internet.
It's a platform.
And in the real world, it's a platform play. That's open source. This is one of the most interesting things I've seen in 20 years in the technology business. Bitcoin is one of those moments where I told everybody to stop everything and get me a Bitcoin episode within a week. Because it's so inspiring, scary, and big that my prediction is Bitcoin is going to change everything or be shut down. It's going to be binary.
All or nothing.
Yeah. It's just an all or nothing proposition.
So that was from This Week in Startups, episode 140. Now, that episode's actually interesting to go back and watch. It's got an interview with Gavin Andreessen and Amir Taki. Gavin, of course, the lead developer of Bitcoin and the Bitcoin Foundation. Well, what has Jason Calacanis been saying about Bitcoin more recently? In a Twitter search that popped up on December 6th, they were talking about the price of Bitcoin. He says, look for a 10x trading range in 2014, $300 to $3,000, with two or three events driving the price. If another shoe drops, we could see Bitcoin 250 over the winter, as folks put it in the fad bucket. Of course, all it takes is one government to devalue their currency and a bunch of rich people to be saved by buying Bitcoin, or this to become a monster. I think a major part of the issue right now is the, quote, onboarding, unquote, of folks into the economy. It takes a week to get in and out of Bitcoin. On a cash basis, you can trade in seconds. And many are speculating, not long-term holding. Over time, a wider base of participants should reduce volatility, right? Now that's the end of the tweet. Now, interestingly, Jason Calacanis' name came up on the Guru Roulette Wheel way back in show 62 of the original Mad Money Machine. In that episode, we focused on his article from his website, calacanis.com, and he focused on abusive pricing. This is what I read from his website way back on that show. Today, when I left the W Hotel in New York, I hit the coffee bar in the lobby for 8 ounces of coffee. I thought they gave this for free to their customers, who pay $400 a night, but they don't. So I went to pay for my 8 ounces, and the woman told me, $2.80. To which I said, really? She said, yes. I said, that's abusive. That's $1.30 more than Starbucks. If your coffee is twice the price of Starbucks, the kings of abusing pricing, you're really abusing people. I left the coffee at the counter after I had put milk and sugar in it in disgust. Come on, W Hotel, be nice to your customers. Don't abuse them. Well, congratulations once again, Jason Calacanis. You're the guru on the new Mad Money Machine, Episode 3. Well, it's a new year, and it's time for some new predictions. Let's see what's going to happen in the year 2014 for Bitcoin. The first one, altcoins will go the way of dot-com stocks. Remember the dot-com era and how some of those crazy stocks went up in value and then disappeared completely from the face of the earth? I think a couple of altcoins will survive, and rightly so. I think altcoins have their place. You know, one of the key things I like about altcoins is they are competition to Bitcoin. It keeps the Bitcoin Foundation and developers honest. It keeps them doing good instead of evil. Because as soon as they start doing evil, well, one of the altcoins could possibly jump in, or we could possibly all leap over to the altcoin as our life raft. Another prediction for 2014. Yeah, this is kind of an easier one. Bitcoin QT 0.9 will be released, and it should have the BIP-0070 payment protocol in it, which should make it easier to establish who you're sending Bitcoins to instead of using that big, long address. Another prediction, Bitcoin will remain the top decentralized electronic currency. Ah, okay, that's easy. Another one, three major retailers will accept Bitcoin directly. We've already heard Overstock.com should be one of those. There will be two more. What about the price? I might as well predict the price. I think the high will reach 7,000 and the low will be $600. I think there'll be a setback somewhere soon, but then we'll keep going up from there. A couple more predictions for 2014. This is a prediction about a prediction market. I think that we will see a pretty significant prediction market using Bitcoin as the foundation to start to achieve critical mass. And prediction markets, of course, are places where you place bets on events. Not necessarily, not sports. This is not sports betting. This is betting on world events. And it actually draws upon the collected wisdom of everyone, everyone, at least that has Bitcoin, to bet on what they think is going to happen, bet on certain things happening. Yeah, there's been a couple of prediction markets that are out there now, but none of them has really got the critical mass yet. I think 2014 will be the year that we do see one with critical mass. And another one is, I think that we'll see an altcoin or a layer on top of Bitcoin, whether it's Open Transaction or one of the Mastercoin or somebody, who will come out with a protocol specifically for electronic voting. And wouldn't that be nice to have had before we did the Let's Talk Bitcoin podcast competition? So there are some predictions for 2014. Let's look at the Bitcoin Market Minute. Again, I'm coming to you on Monday, January 6th. According to bitstamp.com, the weekly high is 99 cents per millibit, and the low was 71 cents per millibit. Currently, I'm looking at about 92 cents per millibit. The market cap at that price for all bitcoins, $11.22 billion. The total number of bitcoins in circulation, 12.18 million. The average time between blocks, 8.5 minutes. The reward for miners per block at this price, $23,000. And the average transaction fee per block, you know, when miners get the transaction fee in addition to just the actual mining reward, as I understand it, and the way I'm computing it, it looks like the average they're getting per block is about $83 in transaction fees. I need to study that a little bit to see that that's right. That sounds a little bit low compared to the $23,000 that they're getting for their block reward. That's your Market Minute. Speaking of the Bitcoin price, Trace Mayer was interviewed at the Las Vegas Bitcoin Conference recently, and here's what he thought the Bitcoin price could go to.
This is just the beginning. When I was at a dinner with Big Barry from Second Market to put it together, 25 people there, top finance out of New York. You know, he's doing the dog and pony show trying to get people in this investment trust, you know, because going to make some money with it. And one of the guys there was a senior vice president at Goldman Sachs in private wealth management. And he kind of put me on the spot, like, you know, kind of top upper bound of where Bitcoin can go. Where do you think that is? And I laid out the case for him, you know, just 1% of the assets in offshore tax haven bank accounts, if it came into Bitcoin, which would be a great asymmetric hedge to the current problems that are out there, $2.8 million per Bitcoin.
Woohoo! Sign me up. Give me some Bitcoin. $2.8 million per Bitcoin. Oh my goodness. No, I think someone has a decimal place. A little bit out of place there. If you multiply the 2.8 million per Bitcoin times 12 million Bitcoins, that works out to be about $35 trillion market cap for the 1% of offshore bank accounts. No, 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 no. Maybe divide that by 100 and get us to $28,000 per Bitcoin. Nonetheless, I appreciate his enthusiasm.
So, I mean, $800, $1,200, like, we're just in the initial stages of price discovery. And there's a lot of volatility because there's so much asymmetric information. It's hard to comprehend and understand, see where it's going to go. But people are coming across, they're doing their research, and they're like, this could be big. Yeah. This could be really, really big.
Now, admittedly, he's only talking about one effect on the price of Bitcoin, that is offshore banking. And if you combine that possibly with all the other effects of different countries and different ways that people might get into Bitcoin, yeah, maybe the price could go even higher than that. But 2.8 million, woo! Woo! But numbers don't lie. Numbers don't lie. Numbers are as close as we get to the hand of God. We were watching a movie on New Year's Day. Someone had recommended I watch Pacific Rim. Some people said, it wasn't any good. Some people said, yeah, man, it was really good. So we watched it. Fell asleep about an hour into it. Never did really see the end of it. But there was this one little clip that I pulled from Pacific Rim that I think applies to Bitcoin.
That's a problem then, because see, he actually can't give you anything more than a prediction.
No kaiju entrails over my side of the room. You know the rules. Every bloody day is incessant.
Yes. On point.
Numbers do not lie. Politics and poetry, promises, these are lies. Numbers are as close as we get to the handwriting of God.
What?
Would you give me a moment? There will be a double event. And then shortly thereafter, three. And then four.
And then we're dead. I get it.
Alas, this is where the good news comes.
So, if we apply that to Bitcoin, a doubling from $900 is $1,800. A doubling again is $3,600. And a doubling again gets us to $7,200, which was my predicted high for 2014. Oh, the absurdity of it all. Well, I want to do one final segment on this episode of the Madman Machine. This final segment is going to be very long, in fact. It's going to be a one-way debate with Robert Wenzel of the Economics Policy Journal. He was asked a bunch of questions by John Wesley Smith out at a website called DestinySurvival.com. There was about a 30-minute show, I think, where John Wesley Smith asked Robert Wenzel questions about Bitcoin. And Mr. Smith was generally interested in Bitcoin, and it's unfortunate that Mr. Wenzel didn't answer his questions properly. So what I'm going to do is play that interview with the questions, with Mr. Wenzel's responses, and then I'm going to edit in my responses as the way they should be toward the end of, at the end of this show. In the meantime, though, I'd like to urge you once again, if you would like the Mad Money Machine and you'd like to see it keep going, I need your donations before January the 11th, before this Sunday, 3 a.m., January 11th. That's the deadline for the Let's Talk Bitcoin podcast competition. 3 a.m. Sunday morning, January the 12th is the deadline for voting. I'm assuming they're going to be looking through the blockchain to make sure votes that come in after that minute aren't counted. But I'd like to get your donations in. Look on my website, madmanmachine.com, for the donation address. I'll be collecting them all up. And if I see that I've gotten enough to apply to the contest and win it, then I'll send it in and apply. If it's not enough, then I'll just keep it as a donation to the show, which I do appreciate. Thank you so much. Just to give you an idea of how much money it looks like I need, at the moment, the leading episode out there has 109 millibit coins. That works out to be $98 or so. It only had 10 transactions, though, so that's 10 millibit coins per transaction. My show had 41 transactions, but only half a millibit coin per transaction. Remember, that's how we thought we were voting. We were sending in 0.1 millibit coins for voting, so that was wrong. I've only got 21 millibit coins at the moment. That's $19 compared to the $98. You can see that I am about $80 short of the leader. And who knows how much the leader's going to vote up in or auction at the last few minutes of the competition. So that's the kind of numbers I'm looking at. If I can get five of you to spare $20 in bitcoins, $20 in bitcoins, I think we would be well on our way to winning this thing. I'm in it to win it. I want to keep the Madman Machine going. So I appreciate your donations. Go to madmanmachine.com. Stay tuned for the final segment. This is Paul Boyer saying it takes money to make money and it takes Bitcoin to make a Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next time. So I'll take you now to John Wesley Smith of DestinySurvival.com, and he'll introduce his guest, Robert Wenzel. I'll be cutting in with my rebuttal. Not really a one-sided debate, a rebuttal.
Bitcoin has been described as revolutionary, but does it deserve the hype? What is Bitcoin? What are its pros and cons? And is it for you and me as preppers? I'll discuss Bitcoin with Robert Wenzel of the EconomicPolicyJournal.com. Robert Wenzel is editor and publisher of EconomicPolicyJournal.com, a daily internet commentary on economics and politics. He has received praise for the site from across the political spectrum, from libertarian Ron Paul to former Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin. Wenzel is known for his warning about the 2008 financial crisis and the tear the building down speech he gave at the New York Federal Reserve. He also delivered the 2013 Henry Hazlitt Memorial Lecture at the Austrian Economics Research Conference that took place at the Mises Institute.
This is Destiny Survival Radio. I'm John Wesley Smith, and I'm honored today to welcome Robert Wenzel. Robert, welcome to Destiny Survival Radio.
Hi, glad to be on the show.
I want to talk about Bitcoin, and my thanks to Michael Snyder of the Economic Collapse blog for referring me to you. And the thing about Bitcoin is this. I have read plenty. I have heard plenty. Just enough, though, to be both intrigued and confused. And I guess the thing that I'm wanting to know overall as we ponder some things today is whether or not Bitcoin is something that people who are into preparedness should get into. And so, first of all, if you can tell me what in the world is Bitcoin. Let's start from square one.
Okay, Bitcoin is an electronic payment or actually bookkeeping system where there's been a number of units created or bitcoins. The entire concept was created by a developer known as Satoshi Nakamoto, and that's a pseudonym. We don't know if that's an individual or a group of people that worked together to design the algorithms necessary to drive the whole Bitcoin. But the idea is that there will only be a certain amount of Bitcoins outstanding over time. They're created by people actually running computer programs to solve different algorithms. Right now, there's roughly about 12 million Bitcoins outstanding. When all the algorithms are solved, it will be 22 million or something along that line. Now, those are just units of account, each Bitcoin. It's a little misleading that they have to be created. There's a lot of people. I'm sort of a Bitcoin skeptic and have been warning people to watch out about Bitcoin. And some of the people come back to me and say, well, it's just because you don't understand the algorithms and the energy and electricity used and so on and so forth to create Bitcoin. But it's a bookkeeping system of these units, and it does not have to be something that has to be created over time. There's another electronic currency by the name of Ripple, where they just released all their units all at once. So it's a little misleading, and it's deceiving people, and it's confusing them to think there's more to it than there is. So there are these units out there. Some batches are owned by individuals, some large batches, and then others have been purchased as these Bitcoins have been released into the market, so to speak. And the price has gone from, I know people that have bought Bitcoin as low as 12 cents, and the high most recently was around $1,400. So
wow.
You've had an incredible increase. But the reason for that is there's really only 12 million of these units outstanding.
Okay, well, at this point, Mr. Wenzel talks about how of the 12 million, there are between 3 and 6 million that are lost, and how that impacts the amount of float and the price of Bitcoin and so forth. But the guy asks you, what is Bitcoin? It's like he asks you what time it was, and you're telling him the disadvantages of a wind-up clock. You know, here's what Bitcoin is. A decentralized, electronic, digital currency used to make payments over the internet, predominantly, can be made for payments elsewhere as well. But that's what Bitcoin is. It's both a protocol and a currency or a payment on top of the protocol. The most interesting aspect is the protocol. It's the underlying computer system upon which currency and payments can be made. And it was invented 5 years ago. And it's been going strong ever since.
And that's why you have the price up. Now, the price going up is convincing a lot of people that it's a great place to be. And I come from a financial background, so I understand pump and dump schemes, tulip mania, and all that kind of stuff. And this has all the hallmarks of that. So I'm a skeptic. I consider it an extremely dangerous speculation, not something that I would recommend for someone who is preparing for a crash in the dollar. You're much better off with gold and silver.
Okay, well, there he lays the cards on the table. He says he's a Bitcoin skeptic and he's a gold bug. He thinks Bitcoin's a Ponzi scheme. And, of course, he doesn't know what a Ponzi scheme means. there's been several rebuttals to that. I won't even go into it. He says that people are getting into it because the price is going up. And I think that that is accurate to some degree. I think a lot of people are getting, a lot of people's attention is turning towards Bitcoin because of the enormous increase in price. But once they really look at Bitcoin and see what it's all about, I think they're more excited about the fundamentals of it than just the price.
Okay, well, that's, wow. I've got a whole bunch of questions, right. and I want to ask them all at once. you know, this is really interesting because, you know, as I said, I've read enough and heard enough to be intrigued and confused, but I, you know, and I certainly don't have the background that you do, but I'm wary myself, and that's why I wanted to get someone such as yourself to come on because, you know, it is a kind of a strange thing, and, you know, I've heard some people who are quite enthusiastic. This is an alternative currency, and Bitcoin gets around the middleman. You don't have to deal with the bankers and all that kind of thing. I guess the first question that comes to mind is, do you have any idea where there's a finite number of these Bitcoins?
Well, the way the Bitcoin is run, the program, the way it's structured, the software program, you get to see where every Bitcoin is in the sense of the code number and where it physically is and what kind of groups they are, whether somebody owns a half a Bitcoin or 100 or 1,000, whatever the case might be, unless they're dividing it up into different wallets or something like that. You get to see. You see where they all are as far as groups, whether it's one Bitcoin or 100 or whatever the case. Every 11 million Bitcoins that are out there, you get to see on the computer, and you get to see when they're moved. Is someone?
All right, now hold up just a second. The question was about the finite number of Bitcoins, not about transactions or how Bitcoins are seen on the blockchain. So yes, there's a finite number of Bitcoins. There will only ever be 21 million Bitcoins generated. They can be subdivided down to 8 decimal places. Each one of those little tiny pieces of a Bitcoin is called a Satoshi, named after its inventor. And that would equal 2.1 quadrillion Satoshis in the end. So yes, there's a finite number. How is that achieved? Well, we started out with only 50 Bitcoins at the very beginning, 5 years ago. Every 10 minutes in a block of transactions, whoever successfully computes that transaction block's hash value receives a Bitcoin reward. It started out as 50 Bitcoins the first 4 years. Then after 4 years, it halved into 25 Bitcoins, which it is currently. It'll halve again in 3 years to 12 and a half. And every 4 years thereafter, after the Bitcoin block reward will divide into half. Miners get those new Bitcoins. We have a limit of them. Right now, there's 12.8 million.
Which brings up another point. There are some people out there, And you see it in reports, not only in chat rooms, but, for example, the Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, put out a report on Bitcoin, and they claim one of the advantages of it was anonymity. And I contend that's not so, because you get to see all these transactions and where people are buying and stuff like that. So unless you're really going through a lot of technical gyrations to try and hide your anonymity, this is less anonymous than paper currency, than gold, than anything.
Okay, and then he goes on and on about Silk Road and drug traffic and how you can be traced with everything you buy, and it's very dangerous. What he's doing here is throwing the baby out with the very dirty bathwater. It is somewhat true that Bitcoin is not anonymous. There are steps that can be taken to make your transactions a little more private. They're not completely private. There will be some enhancements in later Bitcoin protocols and clients that will make your transactions a little bit more private. There are steps that you can take to add to your privacy, but it's not as bad a picture as what he's painting. And anyway, the question was, is there a limit to the number of Bitcoins?
You know, the anonymity argument for Bitcoin doesn't hold as far as I'm concerned. The second argument is that, well, with Bitcoin, transactions are at the retail level do not have the same fees attached to them that MasterCard, Visa, and American Express have.
Okay? Right.
Now, a big part of the reason.
Okay, here he goes on to say that a big part of the reason why MasterCard, Visa, American Express have big fees is because they allow chargebacks in the system. So the buyer claims that they didn't get the product they deserve, they want their money back, MasterCard, Visa give them their money back, and then they've got to either take the loss or go back to the merchant. And he says that third-party providers will act between the merchant and the customer in Bitcoin just as well. So someone buys using Bitcoin a product somewhere, it'll actually go through something like BitPay. He says that legislation would make it so that BitPay would require there to be chargebacks given, and that would then add a fee that's commensurate to Visa, MasterCard, American Express. I think that remains to be seen. A merchant certainly doesn't have to use BitPay. That's the first thing. He thinks that the merchant would have to use BitPay because they can't handle the conversion between currency and Bitcoin. Those are automated. That's on the internet. They can use a smartphone, which automatically computes the conversion rate for them. There's no need for that. There's really no need to use BitPay if you just want to accept Bitcoin. Now, if you want to accept dollars instead of Bitcoin, then BitPay is the way to go, and he's right. Would legislation like that hold up? Boy, I sure hope not, but it could.
You know, that's going to wipe out the second so-called advantage. And then after that, there's just no advantage to Bitcoin at all, none whatsoever. It's worse because all your transactions can be tracked.
That's a pretty bold claim that there's no advantage to Bitcoin at all, really? I think I beg to differ there. I think there is an advantage to Bitcoin over that. It's a store of currency that you can control yourself. It's limited in amount, which is the question originally, and it's a very low fee transaction if it's person to person.
Let's back up. Let's say that I wanted to get into Bitcoin. What would I have to do? Because you mentioned a wallet earlier, and I've heard about that, and explain what that's all about. What would I do if I wanted to buy Bitcoin?
Well, that's a good question. You have to be very careful because the government has been shutting down different exchanges who haven't met certain requirements. For example...
Oh, my goodness. Wait. What? Answer the question. How do you buy Bitcoin? Let's see. You can go to an exchange, which is what he's about to harp on. Mt. Gox, Bitstamp, BTCE, these are exchanges. You can go to an online service called Coinbase.com and link up your bank account and exchange funds from your bank account into Bitcoin. You can meet people in person and exchange in person. You can sell a good or service for Bitcoin, or you can mine them, which is harder and harder to do, quite frankly. But those are four ways that you can get Bitcoin. Now, he went on and on about the problems with exchanges and all this sort of stuff. That's not an answer to the question.
Okay, so you have to get a wallet, right?
Good luck with all that.
So this is...
I see. You're looking through the hall. Yeah, I mean, it's a very complex process to do that, and you really need to go to one of these sites. That's another reason, you know, unless this becomes much easier to transact, it makes it very, very difficult for people to buy. I mean, they have to... If you go to Bitstamp, you're going to have to get the wallet first, then you're going to have to identify who you are, then somehow you're going to have to transfer the money to them, and you know, then you get your coins.
Oh my goodness, what a horrible answer. Yes, you can open an online wallet at Coinbase.com. You can go and have a wallet at blockchain.info. These are all very simple to use. I mean, they're not the highest in security, but they're very simple to use.
So what is it being used for now? I mean, obviously there have been some rather nefarious things, drugs and whatever else that that have been involved in this. So what is Bitcoin being used for, or what potentially could it be used for?
Right now, for the most part, I mean, I see probably 97% of the activity with Bitcoin is for people speculating on Bitcoin that they're going to go up in value.
All right, really not very good answer to the question there once again. Bitcoin is useful for sending money over the internet. I think the number one thing that will be replaced by Bitcoin, the another one potential thing that could be replaced by Bitcoin is something like Western Union wire transfers and bank transfers, bank wire transfers. Transferring money across international borders at very low fee is a perfect application for Bitcoin. Now, another great application that I've talked about that I like for Bitcoin is if it could replace PayPal in eBay. It would be a great way to pay for something that you, to somebody you don't know. Just send them some Bitcoin and they send you the product. Other things, there are online services like gift.com, G-Y-F-T, where you can buy over 200 different gift cards to popular stores like Target and Amazon.com and many other places. So there's a growing economy. Bitcoin's only 5 years old, and it's really only 2 years in the activity, in the active market online. So we will watch and see a lot of growth in the internet and Bitcoin in the next year or two. There'll be a lot more places to accept it.
Now, there are some places that will accept Bitcoins, but again, they're doing it in the sense of using this middleman, BitPay. And really, they're not really holding Bitcoins. They're not really considering them money. What they're doing, BitPay has gone in there and says, hey, take the Bitcoins and we'll convert them immediately to cash for you. So that's what's going on at this point. And it's limited. I mean, there's not a lot of places that accept Bitcoin tonight. And again, if it ever got to any significant size where you could actually use it in most retail stores and places like that, MasterCard, Visa, and American Express are going to just crush it. It's not going to happen. Hmm. It's a game. It's a toy right now, and it's not a serious commercial tool.
Okay, well, that's a horrible characterization to the questions that I got to a guy that's answering, I think, asking rather serious questions about what is Bitcoin. Please tell me what it is about. And just to deride it without explaining it is awful.
Does anybody hold a patent on Bitcoin? You talked about the creators earlier. Do they have any kind of patent, or does somebody have a patent on a similar currency? Could this be a problem?
Well, that's a very, very good question. The Bitcoin itself, as far as I'm aware, no one holds a patent on it. It was kind of created mysteriously, and the whole idea was to keep it away from central government. But J.P. Morgan, apparently roughly 10 years ago, drew up some kind of plan that was very similar, and they just renewed the patent on it. So you might see J.P. Morgan, which is certainly not anti-government or central planning or anything like that, they certainly have the capability now of causing trouble for Bitcoin and people like that. But there's a lot of Bitcoin is open source, so there's a lot of other competing currencies right now. There's something called Litecoin, Namecoin, Peercoin. There's hundreds of them.
Really?
Scrape that the Bitcoin template. You can scrape the Bitcoin template and start your own money.
Huh.
So.
All right, the question was, does anyone hold a patent on Bitcoin? The answer is no. It's an open source protocol, as Robert mentioned. There may be some edge providers that hold certain, that try to acquire certain patents on the way they handle Bitcoin around the edges, how they transact with Bitcoin and so forth. There may be patents on layers on top of the Bitcoin protocol eventually. He mentioned the J.P. Morgan patent that was awarded 10 or so years ago. I don't see that as a threat at all to Bitcoin, and I don't see it as a threat to anyone on the edges of Bitcoin either. Now, as far as the altcoins go, yes, there can be an infinite number of cryptocurrencies that compete with Bitcoin, but good luck getting the network effect. Good luck getting as many people running as there are running Bitcoin. For example, what if someone came out with a Twitter competitor? That's very easy to do, right? Someone could invent something just like Twitter, maybe 150 characters instead of 140. Now, it would be good to have competition to Twitter in case something vile happened to Twitter. Twitter 2.0 could be good competition, and if we didn't like Twitter, we could jump to Twitter 2.0.
Well, so does anybody have particular control over Bitcoin?
Not really. I mean, it was designed so that there wouldn't be that kind of control. If and again, I'm not sure about the complete way this would work, but you could put changes in the software to allow certain things and take certain things out. It was done once or twice already. But it seems to me when there's a consensus of the major Bitcoin holders, but I'm not completely sure on how that works.
That's kind of a good answer, or not quite all the way there. The Bitcoin Foundation is comprised of the lead developers of the Bitcoin protocol and the Bitcoin main client. What they'll do is make proposed releases of the new Bitcoin protocol, the new Bitcoin client, and it's up to the community at large to accept those changes and implement them. If they don't like it and they don't implement it, then it doesn't take effect.
What gives Bitcoin any value?
Right now, it's just the demand by people thinking that it will become a currency or holding it because they think it's going to go up in value.
What gives Bitcoin its value is simply its use as a medium of exchange over the internet. It has a limited supply, which is good, and people are finding it useful. Now, the blockchain.info people have recently said that they have signed on to their 1 millionth person with a wallet. And their 1 millionth wallet was generated recently, up from just 500,000 in October. There are lots and lots and lots more people seeing the value of Bitcoin. And when all of these people have to go out and get a Bitcoin in order to make a means of transaction, well, who's going to sell it to them? Somebody that's going to ask a large price for it, because they want to keep them too. That's why the price is going up. It's just because there's more and more people wanting to get in on this medium of exchange.
If the Federal Reserve can create money electronically, what's the difference between that and Bitcoin?
Well, I mean, now that's a good question, okay? The Federal Reserve does create money out of thin air, much the way the original Bitcoins were.
Okay, well, here too, Robert goes into an unsatisfactory answer. 5 minutes long, talking about the regression theorem and how money came from gold and how gold was used as a barter and all this sort of stuff, and that Bitcoin was used in a illegal drug trade from the beginning. Well, the difference between the Federal Reserve and Bitcoin, as we all know, is that the Federal Reserve can print unlimited amounts of money, and Bitcoin, there's only going to be 21 million or 2.1 quadrillion Satoshis ever created. That limits it, and there'll be plenty to go around, but it's just that your currency won't get inflated away.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm just a country boy, and this stuff seems like Alice in Wonderland to me. I mean, you know, because, you know, we're dealing with a fiat money system, and then we've got something like Bitcoin that comes along, and I can really see the appeal, because people will say, look, you don't have to go through the big central banks and blah, 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 and this is an alternative currency and so on and so forth. And, you know, I can see the appeal to it. So what would you say to somebody that that finds it appealing in that sense?
Well, I would just simply say, fine, if you have no problem with the government now, 10 years from now, being able to pull out all your transactions and look at all the buying and selling you've done.
Well, once again, we're back to the anonymity argument, and if the government wants to read your credit cards, they can do that too. They can also look at PayPal, you know, so Bitcoin is no worse off than what we're doing now online. And there's every potential that it will get better. And I would say you're right. There is a large appeal to Bitcoin. I outlined in my very first Mad Money Machine podcast about Bitcoin what some of the exciting things are about Bitcoin in the future. They include the fact that Bitcoin is to money what email was to letters. That itself is a revolution, that you can send money easily through the internet without a middleman. It's just at the beginning of its adoption phase, that it's available to every person on Earth with electricity, and even then some. There are fewer risks for merchants with Bitcoin in that transactions are secure and irreversible, and merchants are protected from fraudulent chargebacks. Customers are protected in that merchants can't force an unwanted transaction. You know, and now a merchant gets your credit card number, they can go off and buy stuff with your credit card number. They can't just go off and buy stuff with your Bitcoin key. You need the private key. Bitcoin payments can be made without personal information tied to the transaction. You can post a picture of your Bitcoin address anywhere and people can send you Bitcoins. I like the fact that it eliminates a need for third party like Visa, MasterCard, American Express, or Western Union or wire transfers. And it stops the governments from being able to create the money to pay for stupid stuff. And Bitcoin is more than just a currency. With the blockchain, it's a ledger of transactions that's secured by mathematics. And by transactions, we're talking about many new kinds of financial transactions that could happen on top of the Bitcoin protocol. Lending, stocks, contracts, all kinds of interesting things could come about.
I'm not trying to argue for Bitcoin. I'm just trying to sort this out as far as, you know, what's what here.
Yeah, now, you're asking a good question.
Bitcoin is mostly for online activity, right? I mean, is there any way to, at this point, go into a retail store and use it somewhere? I mean, I've heard that that's possible in a few places.
Yeah, well, see, that. I mean, your actual transactions all done by these blockchains, which are on the Internet. So whenever a transaction is done, it's seen by the blockchain. But there are stores where you can go in. I mean, you don't really need to have access to a computer. If you have your wallet, your passcode information, all that sort of stuff on a piece of paper, I mean, that's good enough. And if you can walk into one of these retail stores, I haven't seen any of these retail stores, so I don't know exactly how they do it. I would imagine they have a computer there.
Well, the answer is yes, you could definitely accept Bitcoin at a retail store. The merchant simply holds up a QR code, and you scan it with your smartphone. You pay the required amount of money to that QR code, and you're done. The merchant then sees that the transaction made it to the blockchain, and they give you the product or service. Now, Robert brought up once again how a retail merchant could use BitPay to receive Bitcoin and have it immediately transferred into dollars.
Well, yeah, it seems to me like you might as well just go ahead and use a credit card in a case like that, you know? I mean, because you've got to start with something, you know, right. You've got to start with dollars to begin with, yeah. And it's got to end up in dollars somehow or some dollar value.
Right, right. Exactly. You know, whenever you see these things about, you know, auto dealers sold a Lamborghini for Bitcoins and all this, it's really not happening.
Well, I doubt you'd be able to buy a Lamborghini with a credit card, but you could buy a Lamborghini with Bitcoin. One of the benefits that the merchant has, possibly and potentially, from accepting Bitcoin is there would be no additional fee. All transaction fees are paid by the buyer. And, of course, they're very small. But one of the possibilities would be that the merchant could offer a discount for paying with Bitcoin. Although, you know, today merchants have trouble offering discounts for people paying in cash. The credit cards don't like that. But then Robert goes on to talk about how the fluctuation in the price of Bitcoin scares merchants away.
Well, that's it. It seems like right now there's so much fluctuation in price. I mean, my goodness. It's scary, and I know that we have a fluctuating dollar, and you know, gold prices have been up and down and so on and so forth, but this Bitcoin thing just looks like the wild, wild west as far as the prices are concerned. And it looks to me like what you said earlier, it's more for speculators. Any comments on that?
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. It's acting very much like a penny stock manipulation. And I contend that parts of Bitcoin are now run by guys who are running a a pump and dump scheme. I mean, you
pump and dump. Why would someone dump something that's potentially going up another 10 or 100-fold? I don't think so. Also, about the volatility, the original question is, yes, it's been very volatile, but it's been volatile to the upside. So all the volatility is in the favor of the merchant. If they get bitcoins now, then potentially sometime later they'll be worth even more. So that's pretty good volatility, if you ask me.
For sure, it has aspects of tulip mania, which is just a crazy, crazy rush to buy something that people think will go up in price further because it has been going up. You see that all the time in all kinds of stocks and investments. But also, I think, and this doesn't invalidate my other arguments against Bitcoins if this isn't true, but I suspect that there's been some pump and dump operations that have helped drive it up, and these guys are liquidating their positions now.
Some people are cashing out. Sure, there's no doubt about it. I mean, they're able to buy lots more things with the Bitcoins that they have. But there's a lot more people cashing into it because they see the utility of Bitcoin.
Well, I want to touch on the issue of anonymity again, actually more on the line of security. It sounds to me like maybe this is prone to security issues, fraud or theft or something as far as dealing with this online. Can you comment a little bit more on that?
Yeah, you know, well, anything that has value, even if it's value just for the immediate future, you know, people are going to try and go after it. You have to hide money in your house. You have to hide gold coins if you've got them at your house. And when you're on the internet, if you've got bitcoins, you have to protect that, because if somebody can figure out how to get into your wallet, they can take those bitcoins.
I'll save you from having to listen to the next 3 minutes on a diatribe of the insecurities of Bitcoin. Suffice to say, he's right. Bitcoin has some security precautions that you need to take. And if you don't know how to take them, you probably shouldn't be in Bitcoin.
Now,
the one thing I haven't heard anybody say anything about regarding Bitcoin is the fact that if we have the scenario that some predict, where we could have a giant electromagnetic pulse caused by either solar mass, coronal mass ejection, or a nuclear attack or something, Bitcoin, and of course the whole money system, goes out the window. But especially Bitcoin is going to be vulnerable, it seems like.
Oh yeah, I that would be a serious blow to Bitcoin, unless it's, you know, it would depend upon what kind of a strike it was. If it just completely wipes off computers and all that kind of stuff, you know, how are they going to restructure the blockchains? That would be the big question. With a bank, at least if you still get your regular bank statement, you may be able to prove to the bank what you had there. But that, you know, who are you going to do? How are you going to do that with Bitcoin? So that's
yeah,
the problem. But there are much more day-to-day problems with Bitcoin versus the big mega problems which would cause.
Yeah, good point.
All over the place.
I think if we ever get to the point where fiat currency is completely replaced by Bitcoin, we will have figured out a way to make Bitcoin nuclear and coronal mass ejection hardened, perhaps with secure paper wallets and so forth. But that's a pretty big question.
What do you see in the future for Bitcoin?
A collapse of the price and probably just going down the memory holes, you know, on a long-term way. I mean, it's just not, there's no value for it on a long-term basis for anybody to use. It's a huge speculation. People are having fun with it now. People will lose lots of money, as they do in all tulip manias, pump and dump schemes and all that kind of stuff, when they don't understand the economics behind it. And you see it regularly. But price going up is a very, very strong indicator. It triggers something in people emotionally that causes them to think they understand things they don't, and they jump on board. And I've seen it many, many times in stocks and other investments, and that's what I see happening for Bitcoin in the future.
I see decentralized electronic currencies being tremendously valuable going forward. And as Andreas Antonopoulos likes to say, you can't uninvent it. It's out there now. You know, if Bitcoin went down to a penny per Bitcoin, it would still be tremendously useful as a way to send a value across an electronic channel. And it would be a great store value still. The fact that people lost a lot of money getting in at $900 and it goes down to a penny, that's one thing, but that's looking at it purely as an investment. Bitcoin is much more than that.
But that's probably not going to happen for like another year or two or something? Or do you have a timeline, expiration date?
In order to set the timeline, you would have to know how many people are going to get excited about Bitcoin.
Right.
And how many people are going to go in and buy it. Now, the indication is, by watching the price, there's lots and lots and lots of people buying Bitcoins and driving it up, and everybody's excited about it, and that's why, you know, the world's going to convert to Bitcoins. But that's not the case.
What he's missing, though, is that as more people buy into Bitcoin, the more valuable it gets. Itself gets more valuable. I'm not even talking about valuable in relation to the dollar. I'm talking about intrinsically valuable as a protocol, as a means of exchange, because you have more people that you can reach with Bitcoin. Just like one telephone is not valuable at all, but 10 telephones are pretty valuable, and a million telephones are even more valuable than that. And a billion telephones are more valuable than a million telephones. It's not in relationship to a dollar. It's just because you can reach more people with it.
I'm curious about alternative currencies in general. I'm thinking, you know, Bitcoin has been touted as this great alternative currency, but there are other things out there, and maybe this is confusing apples and oranges, but what about things like Ithaca hours or time banks, you know, different kinds of things that groups have set up to have some sort of alternate currency?
Yeah, I'm not really too excited about most of them. You know, if you look at the test of time, it's been gold and silver. There's no reason for that not to continue at this point, although I'm a little concerned about metal detectors on the street that can detect gold. I mean, that can detect metal, which means they would be able to detect gold.
Well, none of these other alternative currencies have the advantage of a centralized, distributed, verifiable transaction blockchain, which leads to all kinds of problems. Usually you require a third party, or you have the problem of double spending of the money.
But for the most part, I just see gold and silver as being the strongest currencies.
I have to admit, I like gold and silver a whole lot as a currency and as a store of value, but they're awfully hard as a means of exchange through the internet.
So we're in the final moments here. Any other thoughts about Bitcoin in particular?
Just that I would warn people. I mean, you know, if you're a trader and you're looking at it and you have speculative money and you're trying to make some money on it, you know, I guess you can take a shot. You're probably better off going to Las Vegas. You'll probably come out better, at least a better memory.
That's obviously not a serious answer, but even if you took it seriously, you put all your money on red on the roulette wheel, you have a half a chance of doubling it and a half a chance, roughly, of losing it all, other than green and double zero and all that. But in a Bitcoin world, you put all your money in Bitcoin, then you have a chance of losing it all if Bitcoin goes belly up. You have a chance of doubling it, and then some. Or you have just a small chance of making a little bit, or losing a little bit. But you can also use your Bitcoin to exchange it for other things that you need through the internet.
I just would warn people that it's a great speculation at this point. It doesn't seem to have any characteristics that would make it a type of currency that would last long term, and it's certainly something where the government can track every move you make if you use Bitcoin a lot. So I'm not encouraged by it at all.
Well, there you have it. I on the other hand, am encouraged by Bitcoin. I think it has great utility. I think it's something that we need. I think it can't be uninvented. I think there will be improvements made to it, especially in the form of anonymity. I think there will be protocols built on top of Bitcoin that really revolutionize the financial transactions industry. And I just can't wait to see what the future has in store.
Okay, well, I really appreciate your input on all this.
Well, it's a shame because his input is really bad, and I'd like to see you interview somebody else who knows what they're talking about regarding the Bitcoin. You know, there's a saying that it's very difficult to get someone to understand something when they're paid to not understand it. I don't know what's going on in Mr. Wenzel's case. Maybe he owns a whole lot of gold and doesn't want to see it go down in value. I don't know. Because his arguments against Bitcoin are just not well-reasoned. He's worried about anonymity, which, as I've talked about, is not that big of a problem right now. And in the future, it's going to be even less of a problem. He's missing completely all of the advantages that we talk about that Bitcoin provides. And he's looking at it perhaps just as a means of investment, which is completely missing the point. It's not just a means of investment. It's a protocol for transacting value over the internet. Well, thank you so much, James Wesley Smith, for conducting the interview. Once again, your website is destinysurvival.com. And folks, if you want to go and listen to some of the pieces I've cut out of Mr. Wenzel's case against Bitcoin, feel free to go out to Destiny Survival and listen to the entire show. I think I've been pretty fair to him. I haven't cut anything significant out of his arguments against Bitcoin. So that's the end of the rebuttal against Mr. Wenzel. I want to thank you for listening to the Mad Money Machine. Once again, I'm Paul Boyer. It takes money to make money. It takes Bitcoin to make a Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next time. Thank you so much. And don't forget to donate.